Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Emmett Peppers again, and we're talking about Tesla's Q4 earnings, Tesla's stock price of the future, even out to 2025 or 2030. Lots of issues and topics to talk about. Emmett, how have you been?
I'm doing well. Yeah.
Good.
I just getting over a little Omicron and feeling better now, and it wasn't too bad, but yeah, I'm glad to get it done with and move on. Yeah. How about you? You've been on a roll with lots of great content coming out lately.
It feels like the last time I talked to you was like ages ago.
Yeah.
Because I had so many videos like that went out. Yeah, it's been kind of crazy. Yeah, I decided I would just like, if I have a thought, an idea, I would just like, you know, stick out something on the spot rather than like wait a day or two or something. So that kind of like boosted up. And then my production. And then Q4 earnings had a lot of stuff going on. And I thought it was really an interesting twist on things with Elon on the call. I guess the first topic, first question is, hey, what was your impressions about Elon and his focus on FSD and Optimus Robot and the stock, you know, plummeting after? Like, what did, how did you process all that?
Yeah, I mean, after sleeping on it and, you know, seeing the stock react as well, I kind of thought, and I put something out there and he wrote exactly, he responded to my tweet or whatever. It was like the first time he's liked a couple of tweets in the past or something, but it was pretty cool. But yeah, my thought was like, he was almost on the call to be the bearer of like maybe bad news to a lot of Wall Street or a lot of people, you know, staying like, hey, the product roadmap update is that there is no update this year. We're sticking with the three and the Y, you know, and all the other stuff being put off. Demand is too crazy. Supply constraints are keeping us restricted. You know, Cybertruck's not, it doesn't make sense for us to introduce the Semi or the Cybertruck or anything. But hey, here's some breadcrumbs for you. The Tesla bot, I think, is going to be incredible. And full self-driving is, you know, I'm reiterating that it's, I think it's going to be ready very soon. So I think he tried to leave some positive breadcrumbs for us to pick up on, but a lot of institutional money, you know, didn't take it seriously. And they just were like, what? No Cybertruck update. You know, the Cybertruck's being delayed and not, you know, and so, you know, the stock languished afterwards. And it was also, I don't know, in our, you know, retail investing does drive a lot of the stock price these days. And it was one of the most anticipated earnings calls I can ever remember, you know, within our community. Everyone knew like this was going to be great earnings. I can't imagine anyone in our community like selling before earnings. Like we were all waiting. Like if anyone was going to sell like in the month of January, they were probably waiting until like, hey, I got to hold out till earnings, then I'll sell when it pops after that, you know? So you can't imagine, there's probably some pent up demand of needing to sell naturally that didn't happen yet. That probably happened right after earnings anyway. And it just, you know, all the options playing with Tesla, you know, gamma squeezes up and down, you know, it could go either way. So, you know, it just made it for a crazy wild ride with the stock going, I think it went down like $100 the next day.
And it was crazy. It's like, it's back up, I guess. We'll see what happens this week. I mean, every week is kind of crazy with the macro situation as well. A Twitter follower, Greg W. asks, was it an earnings call mistake to tell analysts about FSD and the bot? Should they have saved that talk for fanboys like us? What do you think about that?
Nah, I don't think it was a mistake. I mean, I think he's got to plant the seed in their heads sooner or later, you know, in the Wall Street setting that, hey, this is legitimate. This is serious business we're getting into here. You know, whether you can model it or not, you know, figure this is something we're saying we're doing. And, I think, you know, traditional dinosaur Wall Street, Dino Street or whatever, you know, they have a hard time figuring out what to make of it. You know, it's like a whole new enigma of businesses that they don't even know what to, you know, they're like, what? Yeah. Auto manufacturing is what we know. This is nothing. We don't care about this. You know?
Dino Street, is that a term?
I made it up. I mean, I thought of in my old job, we used to call certain brokers dino brokers. Like, you know, there's prime brokers or, you know, interactive brokers of my company used to call, like, you know, the big ones like JP Morgan or Citibank, like dino brokers, because they're so old and they can't move with technology and stuff and they don't know how to adapt.
Because that's pretty catchy, actually, Dino Street.
Yeah.
especially with like a lot of tech, and especially with Tesla, because so much of what Tesla's doing or talking about is like in the future. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how Dino Street can understand or formulate, you know, a lot of this stuff into their spreadsheets and models when they don't even believe it. You know, they don't believe FSD or bot or anything like that. Most of them, at least.
Well, we don't even. I mean, to be fair, we don't even know how to really model it. I mean, Ark Invest tries to do it, but it's like this. But we don't really understand how to model it very well ourselves. But we know it's worth a lot, you know. And Dino Street, that's not good enough. Like their investors, their bosses have to see numbers. Like, show us where you got these numbers from, you know. And it has to fit my mold, and it just doesn't compute in their models of how they can do it, you know. So it's, you know, it's ripe for disruption and an advantage to the retail, you know, investor who understands that it's a huge value. Even if we can't easily model it out ourselves, we know, like, hey, this is the future. Yeah.
I mean, it feels like, I mean, I'll take this, I want to say the other side to the enthusiasm with FSD or the bot is, it feels like the impact to the stock price is net negative until it shows real revenue and numbers, you know, because it feels like for most of Wall Street, it's a loss of focus, loss of just discipline. They're invested in Tesla because of the cars, you know, this core business. And for Tesla to say, hey, we're focusing on something, you know, this AI, you know, driving itself and these bots and all this other stuff, it just feels like that's something that Wall Street just has a hard time getting behind. And up until it actually works and it's bringing in money, you know, up until then, it feels like it would be kind of a negative for analysts. What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that they get frustrated. You know, they're supposed, you know, they just don't have a way to model it. And they're just going to make it like, you know, seem like pie in the sky fantasy. And that they're just going to focus on the hard numbers of the auto manufacturing and gross margins. And that's what they're going to focus on for their price targets, which is actually thriving right now anyway. So, you know, despite them thinking that Elon's throwing these like pie in the sky ideas out there with robo-taxis and, humanoid robots, you know, the actual core business going on right now is thriving. Gross margins are, you know, increasing, production's increasing faster than anyone expects, you know, so it's good timing for him to be able to put out these ideas, because the core business right now that's working is working exceptionally well.
Yeah. I definitely agree. I want to actually talk about that. But before that, like on Optimus, the robot or the humanoid robot. So I have a theory. Just this morning I was thinking about this, how it might play out, and I want your take on it. So the theory is, the pace of improvement is really fast, meaning like Tesla's really, you know, like getting something that's impressive where they could show during an event or something. But the problem is like the state of robots is so like rudimentary right now. It's like, it's just really, really just basic right now. So even though the rate of improvement is going to be pretty fast, my fear or my concern is that Tesla and Elon get really excited about this, you know, like, for example, with FSD, they got excited about it, saying, oh my gosh, it's almost here. Like, you know, how many years ago? Yeah. So, and then the Tesla community gets behind this too. Like, oh my gosh, you know, we're gonna have AI robots in my house, you know, doing my dishes, you know, in a few years.
Next year.
Yeah. And so you have all this like hype around it, but it just is such a hard problem. You know, it just is so hard because we're talking about a humanoid form. You know, this isn't like, this is really hard, you know, even to balance, to walk, to do all these tasks. And so the reality is it's going to take longer than expected, even though the pace of improvement is faster than expected. So it's this weird thing where, you know, it isn't by Tesla's fault that, you know, they're not moving slow. It's just that the hype and the excitement around this potential, you know, and then everyone gets carried away. And so it can be kind of like another FSD type of situation where, you know, people are waiting. And perhaps, you know, it could be a credibility hit in a sense too, again, where it's like, when is this coming? You know, how long are you going to be talking about this? You know, when is it really going to be making money? And I don't know, it could be a while, man. I mean, this is like, this could be an overhang for quite a while. What do you think?
It could be. I identify, I agree with that concern. But if, you know, and when full self-driving kind of comes to fruition, then I think that'll help relax some of those concerns of this being kind of like an indefinite delay of the humanoid, you know, because people will say, hey, well, full self-driving took longer than expected, but he still delivered on it. You know, let's give him some time for the Tesla bot, you know, the Optimus subprime to become Optimus Prime, you know. So I think I'm excited just to see the prototype unveiling. He said by the end of this year, again, I think he reiterated that, right? So they hope to show their prototype later this year or something. So that's what I'm so excited about. Like that data point of seeing that, that's like, you know, I'm staying uncertain. Like we talk about this all the time. It's hard to, you know, we want to make up as humans, you know, we want to make up our mind one way or the other. It's hard to stay uncertain, you know, but I'm remaining uncertain on this. Until I get more data points, and then I kind of weigh the probabilities a little. But right now, it's like almost 50-50. Is this thing like legitimately going to be, you know, delivered in 2 or 3 years to the first customers, or is it going to be 5 to 10 years out until it gets delivered to the first customer? So I'm like 50-50 on either case. Like, I don't really know. It's hard to stay in that uncertainty indefinitely. But once we get more data points, once we see the prototype, then I'll be like, okay, well, maybe they're closer, or maybe if he delays the prototype unveil until like late next year. You know, I remember Battery Day was supposed to be like soon after AI Day or whatever, but or not AI, it's full self-driving day, auto, you know, and it turned out to be like a year and a half later instead of like 3 months later or whatever. So if he delays unveiling of the prototype for another year, you know, then you kind of realize, okay, maybe this is like 5 to 10 years out, you know. But if the prototype is going to be unveiled and we see it and it's functioning better than any other, you know, you got to imagine Tesla has the top skunk works of any corporation out there right now, like top engineers to do the skunk work stuff, you know. So everything you see leaked out on YouTube of like, you know, Boston Dynamics' robot's latest feats, or I saw Steve Jurvetson just showed something about a humanoid he was pushing, it was balancing, you know, it was kind of leaked out, and that was cool. I'm sure what Tesla's doing is probably going to be much more advanced than what we're seeing in those things.
Yeah, right?
So
definitely.
It'll be exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would expect any prototype, any event to be like very impressive and, you know, just mind blowing. But still, I think it's good.
Remember I thought at AI Day, I thought there'd be like a humanoid robot driving the car and then getting that to life. Maybe that'll happen in the real prototype unveiling. Who knows?
I take the other side though. I think both are happening. Like it will be super impressive and people will be like, oh my gosh, it's coming soon. But then on the flip side, I think it's a harder problem. I think it needs to be like that for many years in order to be a real useful, you know, consumer product. I want to move on to Tesla's growing demand situation. So we have a Twitter follower, Jared Nelson, says, I just think there's been a huge shift in Tesla from the 20 million target to getting FSD done and turning into a software company with 5 million high margin autos. I don't see the pace of expansion online to a 20 million car target and messing around with low margin autos. It's not worth the hassle. And then Corey says, hey guys, I've been waiting lately about how many Model Y and 3 the market could ultimately absorb. With all the margin potential ahead for Tesla from Austin and Berlin, insurance, FSD, App Store, could they sell 5 million cars combined with or without price drops? So I guess he's asking like, you know, what's the limit of a 3 and Y kind of combined market size? Does Tesla need to go downstream at all, or can they stay like with this kind of more premium market and continue to sell a ton of cars? Another question, I guess, is it capped? Do you think they'll just kind of go, they won't hit the 20 million and they'll actually, you know, say, hey, we'll just go high margin, lower unit volume. What's your kind of take on this?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be curious to hear your take after me too, but I think, a lot of it depends on full self-driving. I think without full self-driving, there's still a huge amount of demand they haven't tapped into. There's all kinds of demand levers they could pull. You know, Elon's very good at, you know, creating demand levers, you know, and they don't want to pull them. You know, demand is already so strong. Their wait lists are like a year out for a lot of places or a lot of models. You know, it's insane. So if they start pulling more demand levers, you know, the wait list could get more than, you know, that's not a good experience as a consumer waiting more than a year for your car, you know. So I think they're just trying to keep demand manageable so the wait times aren't, you know, more than a year. And as they increase their supplies, you know, supply capacity or production capacity with, you know, and ease supply constraints, then they'll, you know, if demand isn't naturally growing, they have all kinds of demand levers they can pull. But they might have to keep increasing prices if demand is increasing, you know, unexpectedly, you know, in the meantime. So it's possible even without full self-driving, they could sell 20 million of these cars combined a year. I mean, you know, I mean, the average car price now, I think I saw, was like $40,000+ in the U.S., you know, and that's higher than the starting price for the 3 or the Y. So, I mean, I can see that easy, you know, them hitting 20, even without full self-driving. But when full self-driving comes out and is like robo-taxi ready, you know, first it has to come out to wide release and then be to a point where everyone's comfortable enough to drive on it like they are with autopilot on the highway. And then there has to be some kind of ease of regulations to, you know, or statistical analysis showing it's like 10 times or more safer than a human. And then maybe ease of regulations. And there's a whole process for it to become robo-taxi. But during that process, I think that the demand is just going to go through the roof. So, I mean, what do you think, Dave? How would you answer the question, the same question?
Yeah, no, I mean, I look at it kind of similar. I think there's a pre-robotaxi or pre-autonomous driving phase, and this is a little bit unclear as to what the cap is, because right now there's great demand, but yeah, it seems like, I was reading the first reports of kind of the used and new car market starting to soften a bit. Like they hit their peak a few weeks ago in the pricing, at least, and it's starting to inch down. So yeah, you might see some of that perhaps impact Tesla this year, depending how fast it, let's say, used and new car prices revert to a mean. The other thing is, who knows about this EV tax credit? If that passes, then it just skyrockets demand, you know, obviously. But yeah, longer term, like this FSD. So I was thinking about this. I tweeted out a picture of this, the Wright brothers plane. And I was thinking about this, and it's interesting. Like they did a few times. It only like, it flew like several seconds or 10 or 15 seconds or something. And then eventually, like a couple years later, they were able to fly it several minutes. And I think at that time, there's a few analogies that, you know, they're hit or miss. But one analogy is, it's kind of a binary moment when the airplane starts to fly, especially for a few minutes, right? It's either not flying or it's flying.
Yeah.
And I think similarly with FSD, it's like, it's either like better than a human or not. It's either useful, you know, to drive itself or not. I mean, there's this gray area where it's like a driver assist for a while, like autopilot. But
yeah,
I think the real revolutionary kind of step, or not step, it's, I think it's bigger than even I'm grasping, in a sense, because once FSD actually gets better than a human driver, or much better, let's say, and you could not drive at all, this is not a car anymore, like that we understand a car to be, meaning actually a completely new product that has never been on the market ever before in history.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's no longer a car. Like if we define a car, and everything we know about a car is like a dumb, you know, metal thing that you have to drive. This is not that, you know? This is new product category, completely thing. And these self-driving autonomous cars are going to be the first ones of this new product category. So Jared Nelson on Twitter says, I just think there has been a huge shift in Tesla from the 20 million target to getting FSD done and turning into a software company with 5 million high margin autos. I don't see the pace of expansion aligned to a 20 million target and messing around with low margin autos. It's not worth the hassle. And then Corey on Twitter says, hey guys, I've been wondering lately about how many Model Y and 3s the market could ultimately absorb with all the margin potential ahead for Tesla from Austin, Berlin, Insurance, FSD, App Store. Could they sell 5 million plus combined with or without price drops? I guess the question he's asking is like, is there a limit to the demand for Model 3 and Model Y FSD? And yeah, can they, will they kind of focus more on high margin, kind of lower unit, or will they, you know, kind of go for a 20 million, you know, auto target, and also have high margins, I guess, you know, with self-driving. Yeah. I mean, what's your take kind of on this all?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to hear your take too, but mine is that there's lots of demand levers they could pull. They haven't pulled yet. Elon's referenced that in the past, and they don't want to. There's already like a year-long waiting list for certain models, you know, and we've been waiting for our refresh Model X for like 2 years or something, you know, and we're still hopefully getting pushed back until like March now, every, you know. But even the Model Y or Model 3, I've seen certain people will say they have to wait until end of 2022 or maybe even later in some cases. So I think there's a ton of demand for the Model 3 and the Model Y. You know, they can hardly produce enough for demand not to be more than a year. And imagine if they, you know, consumers, when they're shopping for cars and they, if they have to wait more than a year, a lot of times it might go to something else, right? Well, if they can push, if they can move, if they could double production from where it is now, let's say, and instantly, let's say with magic, then maybe demand's like 3 months instead of a year. But then they can pull demand levers to like extend it even further. Then you have the tax rebate potentially later this year. And then full self-driving, you know, like, so I think the demand and the more people that get these cars, the more word of mouth gets around, the more, you know, it just has an incredible, I think it's like a net promoter score of like 90 something or something, I don't know, something really high. And so the more people that get these cars, they show their friends, the more people want it. It's just taking, you know, it's just a, I don't see a demand. It's a tsunami of demand. And the product life cycle of a car is, you know, 4 to 5 years on average. People get a new car every 4 or 6 years or something. So it just takes a little while for that demand to build up, but it's clearly building up and they're not even really trying to push demand in any way. So I don't see a problem of them getting to 20 million or even beyond, you know, but by 2030, I think, you know, certainly they could, if they can produce 20 million, I think they could certainly sell it. And it's possible they could even do that without full self-driving. Like if full self-driving never got beyond where it is now, I think it's even possible they can get to that without it, with the current state of technology progress they're doing on everything else within the car, you know, coming App Store or whatever else is coming. So what do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think short term, like, you know, it's things look pretty good, but who knows if used car, new car prices will revert to a mean, if Tesla will have to, you know, lower some prices, who knows? It also depends a lot on full self-driving progress, how fast that can get better. Longer term though, yeah, if Tesla is able to solve full self-driving, I look at it as actually, it's a new product. It's not a car anymore. Like for 100 years, humankind has known a car as this, you know, dumb mechanical device that you drive.
Yeah.
This isn't one of those. Yeah. This is a completely new form of transport that's never been introduced in, you know, the world, which is a computer that is driving, you know, you to places. And it reminds me of, I did this Twitter post talking about the Wright brothers with their first airplane flight.
Yeah.
And what I was thinking about when I was looking at that, I'm like, wow, they actually were pioneering. And of course, there were others that were trying as well, but this new form of transport that has never been done before. It was like a binary moment, whether this plane is going to fly or not. And I think in some similar ways you have right now, FSD or autonomous driving, it's like this binary moment. Is it going to work, you know, better than humans or not? If it's not, then it's like pointless, right? But once it switches over, which I think is inevitable at some point, it becomes a new product that is just so much more valuable than the old dumb car, right? Elon is saying it's like five times more utility, but it's not just that. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to focus on it. So you can use that time for else. So it's like, it's a new product that gives like crazy amount of value. And the question is there a second place company that will compete in the short term, meaning the first 3 or 4 years, will there be other companies that have solved FSD like Tesla, right, that can mass produce these cars? And I don't know, I just think that there's a massive supply issue once this is cracked, because like the iPhone, for example, when it first came out, the first year, I think they sold 10 million. Yeah. You can go 0 to 10 million with a phone, that's easy.
Yeah.
you can't go 0 to 10 million with cars. Like the supply chain just doesn't make that possible.
It doesn't go that fast, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then if you believe Elon, that he thinks that they have like perhaps a 5-year or more lead on this, especially on the generalized kind of front, like most people, most companies are doing more of a LiDAR multi-sensor approach, which, you know, could be expensive. It's not, I don't think, improving as fast. I mean, of course, all this is up for debate, but there's a chance that Tesla has this, you know, good period where they're the only product that can do this, like in a mass-produced way, you know, that people can buy, a consumer. And if that's the case, how can they not sell every single product, you know, because it's so revolutionary. It's just completely mind-blowing. It's just life-changing. So, yeah, they're going to sell everything until there's another car company that has, you know, a comparable product and that can scale up. And that's going to take a long time, too. So, interesting stuff for sure.
I agree. I think the full self-driving, the financials get nutty, like Elon said on the call, you know, like we'll see that this is like, you know, even without the full self-driving coming to fruition, like their core business could really back them up for the current valuation and a bigger valuation in the future. But, you know, if and when this full self-driving takes off with their philosophical approach where they have a clear 5-year plus lead, you know, it's really game over for, you know, like, you know, it's going to be crazy.
It's so fascinating because there's so much divergence of opinions and beliefs on this. Like when we, if, you know, if you say Tesla has a 5-year lead, you know, with generalized, let's say autonomous driving with, let's say just vision and neural nets, some people will just like, you know, they'll just go crazy. It's like, they'll just be triggered like crazy because it just is so insane because they look at Tesla as not in the lead and not even close to being the lead. They look at companies like Waymo and Cruise and others. There's Aurora and Mobileye and all these others as being way out there and Tesla's just being so far behind. And so it's like, it's just such a, it's a field with lots of noise, with lots of confusion. And I think ultimately it's going to be the results that matter. Like whoever cracks the nut and actually makes it happen. Like, I think it's going to surprise people and, we'll see. Definitely.
Yeah. No, I think then you talk about an extra zero to Tesla's valuation potential. If they crack it, you know, 5 years ahead of everyone else, then that's in the discussion.
Yeah, definitely. I think analysts though will probably won't believe it that Tesla has that big of a lead. So I think they'll be kind of constantly behind. They'll just like chase the financials, the revenue and, you know, the profits. So the curve goes like super high and slopey, like in terms of adoption. But the analysts are just constantly behind, you know, every quarter they're just being surprised, you know, this
that
happens
first year or two, you'll see tons of announcements by like Ford or, you know, Rivian or Lucid saying, hey, we're coming out with our version next year, beginning next year, it'll compete or, you know, so you'll see tons of announcements. Everyone will be like, oh, competition's coming, but it really could be a 5-year lead. And those announcements might not be anything, just like we've seen in the last 10 years, a lot of these EV announcements.
Yeah, definitely. Anthony on Twitter says, how will a true robotaxi fleet work? Like, will they be call centers that just tap into stalled cars who can't make a decision and don't have a human in them like Waymo? What will the transition period feel like? Are we in it currently? Have you heard of Cruise? They're doing driverless taxi rollout in San Francisco right now. I think it's limited to like 25 miles per hour in certain areas. But yeah, it's impressive that actually, you know, Waymo and Cruise are doing this on a limited basis.
I'm happy they're doing it to start. You know, I think someone's got to start it, and I'm glad they're starting it and kind of trying to pioneer doing it first in that geofenced area from, I think, 11 p.m. to like 5 a.m. or something. They do it. But eventually they'll expand it. You know, they're just starting small and the plans are to expand it. So yeah, I'm impressed that they got that rolling. You know, I hope, you know, I think that if you remember like 2 or 3 years ago, Uber was trying to do something like that, but with the driver in it in Arizona. And then there's that horrific accident and it like put a halt to all of Uber's self-driving plans after that, you know? So that was, hopefully there's nothing too serious that happens with, now with Cruise. I bet you they're being very careful and limiting it. And, so we'll see, but, Yeah, it's the beginnings of something. Their philosophical approach will probably forever limit them to geofenced areas
Yeah.
and probably stick to metropolitan areas and go one city to another, you know. But Tesla's, and it won't ever be as be able to be as safe, I think, as Tesla's full self-driving philosophical approach with, you know, vision only neural nets. And you know, over time, Teslas will become, you know, infinitely safer, I think, than some of these sensor fusion approaches that are geofenced. But I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think?
I mean, generally, I think that, yeah, I think LiDAR and these multimodal kind of approaches have certain advantages. Like, you get a ton more data, you get, you know, just quick 3D mapping of the whole area. Just,
Yeah.
I understand why it's tempting and why companies are doing it. It just, you can have an impressive drive very fast, you know, in terms of development. It's just that I think you're also going to have to solve vision in a way, because there's so much of driving that requires vision as well, like not just the signs, but certain objects and understanding the nuances of
The
situations that,
world.
yeah,
Like
the
if a kid
world.
walks behind a bus, Elon gave that example. Kid walks behind the bus, how do you know the kid's not coming to the other side? You know, that type of stuff, vision is going to be needed for the most, I think, too.
So I think it's a complicated issue, and I think it ultimately, like in terms of improvement, the pace of improvement, it makes sense. Tesla, with their big data fleet of cars, can pull the data and rely on that to improve their vision, while other car companies, you know, they might have some difficulty getting the amount of data needed, you know, to really solve it on a vision front. And so therefore they're going to be relying on LiDAR and that info for a long time. But yeah, I don't know. I think it has some limitations long term. Initially, I think it gives much better results than the vision only. And that's what, you know, we're seeing. But we'll see what happens, definitely. SN10 says, Emmett, could we be settling into a range bound period like 2013 to 2019 with Tesla stock? How would you play this with options? And then he says, Dave, what could eventually break us out of that said range? What broke us out in 2013 and 2020?
It's possible we're range bound for a while until I think it's possible we're range bound until full self-driving really takes off and becomes clear that like, hey, these software revenues from full self-driving is accelerating because it's going to wide release. More people want it, more people ordering it. And then people can see, okay, well, maybe Tesla's onto something here. So I think if you see that come to fruition, that could really break us out of the range if it hasn't already broken out. But it's possible, you know, the stock went up like 10x in, you know, a year and a half, you know, went from like, what was it, 50 billion or even more. It went from like 50 billion market cap to a trillion market cap in like 2 years. So that was crazy. So there's a lot of growth already priced into the stock. And so we should expect Tesla to increase production significantly and gross margin significantly. And they might beat expectations of what that expectation already is, and maybe the price breaks out of the range because of that. But it's possible that that success is somewhat priced in. And in 2013, I think it was the Model S finally being produced that in some sort of profitable way that I think kicked it off and created a short squeeze. In 2019 or 18, I think it was similar with the Model 3, and there was a short squeeze. So I don't know if there's a real short squeeze that could happen this time, because I don't think it's like so heavily shorted, but there are a lot of institutional investors on the sidelines with Tesla, and might have a similar effect if you can get all their attention to say, hey, we need to get a piece of Tesla now. And then it might have a similar effect to accelerate the valuation, but it wouldn't accelerate to 10x again in a year, I don't think. Maybe 2x in a year, best case or something. What do you think, Dave?
I think this situation is really unique or different, I think, in Tesla's history, because I think the power of the whole macro environment right now is really just shaking the markets, where we've had a very, very long bull run. And I mean, we've had ups and downs with like COVID, et cetera, but I think to some extent, and I think it could be a large extent, Tesla's kind of at the mercy in terms of its stock price short term, at mercy of the macro kind of environment. And the sentiment of investors, whether or not it's a risk on or risk off environment. And I think that's kind of the overlooming kind of theme going on. Company-wise, though, I think they're executing like crazy. It's like demand's off the chart. Their margins are growing. Everything is growing. I think last quarter they had like $4 billion of adjusted EBITDA. Annualized, that's like $16 billion. And they're growing so fast. It's like, you know, and their growth is great because it's not like a Facebook where it's like you don't know how many people are going to be using Facebook in 10 years or not. You know, it's like, you just don't know, right? But with cars, it's like a slow start and a slow death too, right? It's just like these like industries that have like big moats naturally because of just the CapEx or the complexity or different things. They're favorites of investors in some ways because of big money investors, because they carry an inherent kind of margin of safety or kind of stability to them, you know, compared to just a pure, let's say, software player or something. So in that sense, like, yeah, to give like, you know, a 50 times EBITDA, like let's say it's $16 billion just analyzed off the last quarter, that's an $800 billion market cap right now. And that's not even saying forward, you know, EBITDA, right? That's just last quarter annualized. So to me, that's like, it's pretty reasonable. And considering the growth, you know, of Tesla, and I think every quarter, as long as they execute, it's going to get better and better. So their financials are driving value on one direction. Macro is, you know, changing and making the sentiment volatile, which ultimately I think has the biggest impact going on right now. But in terms of like, are we in like a long range bound period of like few years? I mean, I don't know. I think the financials are just improving so fast. And I don't think analysts really are expecting Tesla's margins to get much better from here, which I think they can. And I think if Tesla executes in the way I think they can, I think it's going to surprise people in coming quarters for next year or two. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, sure, anything's possible. You know, it could be range bound, but my guess is, I think the financials will, you know, sway people over as long as Tesla executes.
I agree with that. I think it's very it's probable, but yeah, macro markets kind of rule the tide right now. Yeah. So EBITDA might get compressed to 30 times in a year from now, and it might just be the same price, for example, the stock price.
Yeah, definitely. Helping Holdings on Twitter says, is a recession coming and how do you think it will impact Tesla? When the Fed acts, will they cause a recession or will they be able to maintain a balance of healthy economy with low unemployment, lowering inflation? There seems to be a lot of talk about, you know, perhaps the Fed overreacting, kind of pushing interest rates too fast or too high, pulling back liquidity, causing a weak economy to retract, causing a recession. What happens to Tesla? So many questions. I mean, like, well, what's your kind of take on that?
I think Tesla's business is because of the extenuating demand and the sort of imminent full self-driving capacity we believe there will be in the next couple of years for the cars that will further increase demand to crazy levels, that I think that their business is sort of immune to a recession. But the stock price, all the stocks, who knows what happened? You know, sometimes stocks, you know, maybe we've already corrected in a lot of growth in tech stocks with anticipation of a recession, you know, like a lot of growth in tech stocks are down 60%, you know, and Tesla's pretty much flat, you know, like that's a huge success in my mind. Like the other day, Tesla, the whole NASDAQ was down like 3% most of the day. And I think Tesla ended up down like 1%, but the NASDAQ was down like 4 or 5% or so. I don't know, something like that. I was like, wow, that's a big win for Tesla, you know? So I think comparatively, Tesla is doing very well in such a down market for tech and growth stocks. And so I also think the business of Tesla is going to be very healthy despite a recession, if there is one. I'm not sold on a recession happening. I think that means two consecutive quarters of GDP declining. It's possible this first quarter.
Negative GDP for two
negative
quarters.
Sorry. So there's possible this first quarter might be negative slightly, some economists are saying. And so we'll see what happens in the second quarter. But yeah, you know, I don't know. Macro, you know, the macro economy is so difficult to predict. You know, stocks get very jittery, and you know, it's hard to know if stocks have already overreacted in anticipation of a possibility of a recession, or and possibility of interest rates going up, you know, hiked 7 times this year or whatever, you know. So yeah, you know, I really like Kathy Wood's analysis on this stuff. I think she, you know, seems to have good knowledge on the macro economy, and her perspective, I like it. It doesn't mean that the market, you know, reacts the way it should. If she's right, the market's going to, you know, reacts the way that mass markets, mass psychology reacts. But in the end, I think she'll probably be right with some of her analysis, and the market will eventually catch up to that. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, it's interesting. There is this Bloomberg interview I watched the other day by Jeremy Grantham. Mm-hmm. He's calling basically a super bubble that's gonna pop, and it's kind of like scaring people because they're like, oh my gosh, you know. And he's like saying it's gonna be like crazy, you know, like long period of just, you know, just pain and pain and pain. And I was listening to him, but it's like the next morning I'm like, you know, I don't know. I feel like he doesn't really, at least in that Bloomberg interview, and I emailed him right after that saying, hey, I'd love to have you on my channel to discuss it more. But I want to know, like, why he thinks, like, does he think valuations are extremely inflated? Does he think earnings are going to go down because there's going to be a massive recession? Therefore, stocks, I mean, I want to know the reasoning behind, not just this, oh, it's happened before, or, you know, just therefore it'll happen again. Like, I want to know exactly, you know, what the mechanics of, you know, this so-called super bubble bursting is, right? Yeah. The other thing is, when people compare it to, let's say, the financial crisis 2008-2009, I think that was an interesting situation where liquidity in the markets was basically restricted. There was like, you know, it was hard for money to flow in the markets because it was a financial crisis, you know? And when you have that type of pulling back of money in the markets, you have a situation where, like, it's hard to buy the dip. Like, there's not, the money isn't there to buy the dip because everyone is just like, it's all tied up, whatever. There's no liquidity in the system. However, you don't have that this time around. You know, even if there is a recession, you don't have it where all the money is just tied up, financial institutions are going down, and all this fear and panic. It's more likely, I think, that there is a buy the dip. You know, like people, there's a lot of money on the sidelines, I think, that are still, you know, that would take advantage of opportunity. So I think we're in a fundamentally different place than 2008, 2009. So I think the onus is on Jeremy Grantham. If he's saying there's going to be a super bubble bursting and it's going to be all this, you know, pain, he needs to articulate it in a way that he can, you know, actually make the numbers work. Like, you know, what valuation, why is it overvalued? What is it going to refer to, et cetera, all the reasonings before, like, you know, you just kind of believe it because, you know, it sounds good or something, you know?
Yeah. People compare it to the dot-com bubble, 2000 and that crash too. And I think there is some merit to that in some ways, like with a lot of the SPACs, at least, you know, and story stocks, you know, we know all the story EV stocks, you know, whether it was Nikola Motors or Lordstown Motors, or, you know, I personally think, you know, Lucid and Rivian are sort of similar in basket too. But so, you know, there's a lot of story stocks that, you know, had obscene valuations in my mind, and they had no, you know, real business revenue to show for that. It was just kind of promised in the future. And I think there was a lot of that in the dot-com. People were just buying domain names and listing it as a stock. People were like, oh, you know, I think I heard like a Steve Jobs interview. He's like, balls.com. That was like a big one, you know, like just sells balls, all kinds of balls. And people were buying it up and whatever, you know. So there's like, it was just crazy back then. So I feel like there was some of that mania going on with some of the SPACs and some of the story stocks. But I think most of those stocks have been hit real hard already. There's probably some that are still going to be hit harder. But, you know, I don't think it – I think there's a lot of tech and growth stocks that warrant that have actual businesses, you know, whether it's Netflix or, you know, Google or Tesla, you know, there's a lot of businesses out there that are attractive, and at lower valuations, you'd want to buy some of it. You know, it's not some story stock. So,
yeah. Yeah. I actually, I think the dot-com analogy is flawed in terms of what we're going through now. Like, I remember actually back then, it was like, I remember so clearly because like, I was like really into, like tracking the internet and the companies. Yeah. And I remember so clearly that the whole idea was that the internet was going to take over everything, but very fast. Therefore, and it was going to have, you know, you're going to have these massive markets, let's say, you know, with web portals, with e-shopping and, you know, food delivery, all this sorts of stuff. And so therefore, the whole reasoning was because you have this size of a market that's going to be taken over, this startup has the best number one position or chance of taking that market. Therefore, we'll give this company a certain percent of that overall market to justify their market share, their market cap, basically. So the market cap was basically a percent of the total addressable market, which people saw as like huge and imminent. It's going to happen very soon. And so that's why revenue didn't matter at all. It's all about are you, what position are you to take that market size, right? That market, the piece of the pie. And I think, it's fundamentally different right now where I think a lot of that kind of exuberance has been like sucked out of the market right now with growth stocks, where any of that kind of like this, you know, company might expand into, you know, whatever this area that might grow.
It was like, there like 3 months ago, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now it's not really there, but
It's just being all sucked out. Yeah. It's just like squeezed dry that all that hope, you know, the valuation on hope is being squeezed dry. And now it's all going back to more like actual numbers and financials. You've got to have some reasonable valuation with your current business. And so that's where I look at it. I go, oh, you know, I think part of me feels like a lot of the drop has already happened with that kind of exuberant hope. Just some, interesting ideas there.
Yeah.
Moving on, Anthony says, should Tesla buy Boring Company to alleviate traffic congestion created by FSD? what are your thoughts with that?
Yeah, I mean, they, I would love it if Tesla bought Boring Company. They could buy it for, you know, pennies on the dollar compared to what the Boring Company would be, could potentially be worth 10 years from now, you know. But I think there'd be all kinds of red tape and, you know, news FUD against it. And look, Elon's buying, you know, corrupt. He's not just buying SolarCity, he's buying his other companies that are failing, you know, all this stuff. So I don't think they will for that reason.
Yeah,
I think they'd just partner with them and, lots, you know, have strong partnerships. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they should buy Boring Company just because I think they could help accelerate the Boring Company mission. I think it's important. But on the flip side, I think it would hurt Tesla's stock price because Wall Street hates this stuff that diverts focus and attention. They want, you know, a pure play kind of car company that just grows and uses all of its profits.
They would love it if Tesla spun out. It's like full self-driving unit or Skunk First project. They would love it if Tesla would just spin out those pieces to like.
Exactly. Yeah. Spin out Optimus, spin out everything. Just
spin
cars.
Solar, roof, energy, spin that out too, you know?
Exactly. Maximize shareholder value.
Even definitely. Spin out the factories, just focus on the, you know, battery or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah. Roman on Twitter says, when Tesla matures and has more cash than they can spend or invest, should they buy back stock or pay dividends?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, that's a good question. I mean, that was one of the questions on the shareholder call on Say.com that I was bummed didn't get a chance to be asked. It was like, what are your plans to do with all your cash? And I was really curious to hear what his answer would have been. So you know, at one point he said that they're, you know, when he did his last capital raise, people were like, why'd you do that? You don't really need it. But he commented like, we're just raising for a war chest, you know, build up our war chest or something. So like save it for a rainy day or an emergency or whatever. So they have more than enough cash now for that. I mean, it almost makes economical sense if they're growing as fast as they can. They're building as many factories, you know, maybe they start building a factory in India, maybe one like, or Indonesia or something, or another one in the US, one and another one in Europe. You know, all those things might start happening in the next like 2 or 3 years. But by that time, Tesla's balance sheet will be like double what it is now. It'll just be like small dents in their balance sheet to build, you know, 3 new factories at once even. You know, they'll still be printing a ton of money. Full self-driving margins might be crazy, you know. So at some point, maybe they even like start buying back stock. It's like the reverse of a secondary offering, you know, like maybe they're just like, hey, we'll just start buying some of our stock back because what's it doing on our balance sheet, you know, and eventually we could always issue more stock if we ever had to. If we felt like we needed like $10 more billion, which we probably will never need, then we could just do another, you know, offering at a higher price. You know, that's always a possibility, right? I don't think they ever would need to, though. But
yeah,
it almost makes economic sense from like a first principle point of view to like use that cash if they can't use it productively to expand their business further at that time. And they're, you know, just if they're not going to do a dividend anytime, just buy back stock. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I've been thinking about this a little bit. I'm like, yeah, no, you buy back stock if you have to choose between dividends and buying back stock. I think you actually get more value for that. But on the flip side, I think it's going to be a while before this happens. Like, I think, so here's the idea. If Tesla with FSD really is a new product that's never been seen before, and it has this huge value, you know, maybe an order of magnitude greater than the old dumb car, there's got to be a ton of different markets to go into if you think about it. Especially if you're the only game in town, let's say for a generalized solution.
Yeah.
And so if you're in that position, I think you can find a million ways to spend your money. You know, I mean, you could buy, you could, you know, create your own fleet in different cities, right, to augment whatever needs.
But how could they produce more cars? The thing is, like, they might only have production capacity at like 5 million cars per year, and they might already be spoken for the next 2 years, you know, like. Yeah, they could do that, but how are they going to build more factories? You know, by the time they can build more factories, they already have another $50 billion on their balance sheet. You know,
That's true. I mean, that's one thing, but I mean, they could perhaps accelerate production if you spend more money. You could go into different like side markets, like adjacent markets, like logistics. If you actually are delivering things autonomously, you could deliver almost anything, but then that goes into other adjacent markets, like, I don't know, even e-commerce or maybe partnering with Shopify or others. Like, there's so many different parts of the economy that are dependent on transport and logistics that, I don't know, I just think, you know, you're picking.
But I do think Elon wants to be like central command, and he's already spread thin with so many things. I can't imagine him taking on like a dozen new like endeavors within Tesla. True. You know, I feel like he's going to want to just stay focused on the bot and factory production. That's my thought. I think they're not going to do is I don't think they're going to like acquire Legacy Auto. They're not going to try to acquire GM or Ford. There'll be probably all these rumors, like headlines, like is Tesla going to buy Ford or Tesla going to buy Volkswagen with his relationship with Herbert Diess. You know, I don't think Tesla's going to do any of that. I think that's too messy, and Elon knows it, and you know, culture clash, and it's just but I do think, yeah, I mean, they'll try to maximize production as much as they can efficiently, but to a certain point it then becomes so inefficient that it's not worth doing, maybe, you know.
I think actually you mentioned the bot. I think that actually helps like prioritize things going forward. Like, Tesla doesn't need to be involved in everything because the bot is just
That's the future.
It's so crazy. Definitely. A couple more questions. GCDU says, do you believe the announcement of Berlin and Austin opening will be a catalyst for the stock? We did see the stock price jump when Shanghai opening was announced. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think investors have been waiting for this, expecting this. I think if anything, you know, the delay, the continuous delay of these factories kind of officially opening it makes me nervous. You know, it's just, it's going on. I mean, I remember people thought like in the fall it was going to be open in September or October and then November and then December and now January, now February, now March. Like, when is it going to open? Like, it's just like getting delayed, like Full Self-Driving in some ways, it reminds me. I mean, I know they're doing everything they can, but it's just so much red tape dealing with like the regulations in Germany. And I don't know what the delay is in Austin, but that got, I think, a later start than Giga Berlin, I think. But I would think Austin should be open by now and start delivering cars from there. You know, I know they're like doing dry run production and all that, but you know, so I don't know. I mean, I'm a little concerned that it's taking this long. And, you know, what if we're into the summer and they're not open yet? I'm like, man, that seems like realistic to me at this point, you know? So we'll see. I mean, Zach even mentioned on the call, like, hey, we can still do 50% delivery increase this year just on the, you know, Fremont and Shanghai. And I'm not sure why he would, like, state that if he didn't think that was a significant possibility. So I'm like... I'm a little worried now. I don't know. Are you worried, Dave? I don't know. What do you?
I mean, it seems like
Months. It's like, oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, but it's been months.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it seems like Austin is further along. It seems like it's imminent.
You live over there. What's the word?
I mean, I check out the factory every couple of weeks, and it's up. You know, it's pretty much done. I think like Berlin is a tricky situation. I think that has more red tape. So, we'll see. But on the stock price, I don't know. I just don't see Berlin, Austin doing much for the stock price until it contributes to financials, you know, like analysts can actually see something real for them. All right. Emmett, thanks again for just coming on and for sharing your thoughts on all these different topics. I appreciate it. Hope you have a great week. Anything happening or going on?
No, I think earnings coming out in the next week or two is going to be interesting and see where the macro market goes from here. So we'll see. Yeah. But I'm sure we'll talk again in a couple weeks or so and do another chat, and a lot of things will have changed by then too.
For sure. All right. Sounds good. Okay. All right, we'll see you, Emmett. Bye. All right.